I want to talk to you tonight about Joshua. Now, if you are like most people, when we hear Joshua, we think Jericho and the mighty walls. And I think part of the reason is that's something that's dramatic. It's miraculous. It's the same reason that the crossing of the Red Sea is such a neat story when we read about Moses. And if you've had an opportunity to watch the new Bible show that's on the Discovery Channel, much like the Ten Commandments years ago, it's dramatized, because here is something tangible that shows the miraculous power of God. But I want to dig a little deeper tonight in who Joshua was, because Joshua holds a unique distinction of being one of the very few people in the Bible who nothing negative is written about. His character is never brought into question. You never read about sin that he's committed. He seems to be one of the most stalwart people in the Bible. Now, there are a few. You read of men like Enoch, who walked with God and was no more. But when you think about somebody like David, who was called the man after God's own heart, you also read a litany of sins that David had. And when you read about Moses and the great responsibility that Moses had in leading the people, you also see that Moses had a weak side as well. So Joshua is very unique. He starts his life off as a slave in Egypt. He's from the tribe of Ephraim. When they come out of Egypt, he's selected as one of the 12 spies to go into the promised land. And I think that was probably more disappointing for Joshua and Caleb than for nearly anyone, to come back and say, with God's help, we can take this land, and for everybody else to say, forget about it. There's too many people, and they're too big, and they're too strong for us to handle. You know that had to be disappointing for him. He was Moses' personal aide for nearly 40 years. You find him waiting at the base of Mount Sinai when Moses first comes down with the Ten Commandments. He wasn't part of the golden calf incident. When Moses comes down from the mountain, it's Joshua that says, I don't know what's going on in the camp. It kind of sounds like war, but we better get over there. Which is a really funny story in itself if you've really read it, because when Aaron's trying to defend himself on making the golden calf, he said, you know, I tossed all the gold in the fire and this calf popped out. And really, that's how they list that in the Bible, as he makes that excuse. When Moses would speak to God on behalf of the people, they had erected the tent of meeting. And to keep out curious onlookers, they had to have somebody to guard the tent of meeting when Moses wasn't in there. They picked Joshua. Joshua was the man they went to guard that when Moses wasn't in there, because they were afraid somebody would try to sneak in to get a look at God and die. He was 85 years old when Moses died, and he began to rule Israel and took them over into the promised land. It took him 6 years to conquer Canaan, and he was the one that divided it up into the 12 tribes. And he ruled Israel for 25 years. Now, one of the things that makes Joshua special is that God picked him out early. Shortly after they come out of the promised land, they are attacked by the Amalekites. And Moses picks Joshua to take care of that problem. You read in Numbers chapter 27, verse 18, So the Lord said to Moses, take Joshua, son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand on him. So the Spirit of God was possessed by Joshua. There's a running theme through part of Numbers, part of Deuteronomy, and the first chapter of Joshua, where they say, be strong and courageous. And you see this over and over, where they're telling the people, be strong and courageous. Now, this had been a problem when they came out as slaves. You see, the Israelite people didn't go into the promised land the first time around because their mindset was still of that of a slave. They couldn't fathom conquering somebody else. They had been trained to be servants. If you've seen the movie Shawshank Redemption, there's a man who's been locked away for many, many years whose name is Brooks. And when Brooks is let out, he doesn't know how to function in the normal world. And what they call it is institutionalized. He's been in an institution for so long that he doesn't know how to function in the world. And that's kind of where the Israelites were when they first got to the border of the Promised Land. So the second time around, the theme becomes be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. We can take this land because God is with us. Deuteronomy 31, 7 through 8 says, "Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the presence of all Israel, 'Be strong and courageous, for you must go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to their forefathers to give them. And you must divide it among them as their inheritance. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid and do not be discouraged.'" And so that really becomes Joshua's theme, to be strong and to be courageous and to go into battle knowing that God was going to be with them. Not only was the Spirit of God possessed by Joshua, but in nearly everything that you read that Joshua accomplished, the Lord was also going before him. When they crossed the Jordan River, the priest carrying the Ark of the Covenant stepped down into the water, and as their feet touched the water, the river stopped flowing. It says in the Bible that about 20 miles up the river was a town called Adam. And Adam has walls or banks of the river that are 40 feet high. In 1927, there was a landslide that caused those banks to collapse into the Jordan River, and it stopped the flow for nearly an entire day. Now, I'm not trying to take away from the miraculous power of God. I think it's more miraculous that God takes something natural and uses it in his time to be miraculous. Now, am I for certain that's how that river stopped? It stopped because God told it to stop. How he accomplished that, I don't know. It's the same answer I give a lot when people say, what's your view on creationism? I think God made it. That's about all I can tell you. I don't know much more than that. It's the same here. It's amazing that this is the exact same Jordan River that 1,400 years later Jesus Christ would be baptized in. God is really amazing in the things that he does for us. One of the most fascinating aspects of Joshua is his name. Joshua is translated from Hebrew. It's the Hebrew Yeshua. When translated from Hebrew to English, becomes Joshua. The New Testament books were written in Greek. The Old Testament books were written in Hebrew and Aramaic. The name Joshua, the name Yeshua, appears in the Hebrew writings of the New Testament. But when they were translated to the Greek, the name Yeshua became the name Iesus. And the name Iesus, from Greek to English, became the name Jesus. Joshua begins a work that was promised immediately after the fall of man. Because God puts a plan into motion to bring Jesus Christ into this world. And what are we promised? We're promised an eternal rest. We're promised a promised land. We're promised a place where we can be with and in the presence of God at all times. When Joshua took the people into the promised land, that was only a partial rest. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 8 says, "For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken later about another day." If their arriving into the promised land had been the end result, there would have been no need for Jesus to come later. But that wasn't the end. That was merely the protection of God's people and the establishment of God's people. In 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 and 4, it says, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade, kept in heaven for you." It's so amazing when you really get in and read about how God's plan went. In Genesis 3, we read that Adam and Eve sin and are removed from the garden. There's a unique thing that happens when they're removed from the garden. Adam and Eve realize that they are naked, and they clothe themselves with leaves. But when God puts them out of the garden, he clothes them in the skins of animals. And so we see the first sacrifice that came about because of the sin of man. Then we see the people going into... Well, at first we see Abraham coming in and beginning to organize the people. And then the people go into Egypt and are enslaved for 400 years. And when the angel of death comes at the end of the plagues, it's the blood of the lamb spread over the door frame that protects the people. I sometimes think that we miss how horrible that angel of death was. Because when the angel of death came into Egypt, he didn't target just children. Any house that didn't have blood lost their firstborn. In my family, even though I'm in my 40s, my parents only have one child, who's a boy. They have five children, four girls. The firstborn is the one to die, regardless of the age. The wailing, it said in Egypt, was so loud that the Israelites could hear it in their camp. The loss of life is truly staggering for those not under the protection of blood. And then comes the act of circumcision, which is the removal of a piece of body to show the pledge being made to follow God and to trust in God at all times. And then, of course, the ultimate sacrifice of Jesus. Going into the promised land is a huge step, and God used Joshua to complete that step. Getting into God's grace is a huge step, and God used Jesus to bring us there. What a beautiful story. To see that his plan, made specifically for me, began thousands and thousands of years ago. It's amazing. And to see someone like Joshua, who possessed the Spirit of God, who allowed the Spirit of God to lead him and to guide him, is simply amazing. And simply a beautiful story. And I will leave you with that tonight, and with our usual blessing before Jack gets up and sings. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift his countenance upon you and give you peace.